I'm Stuart Maydow, the author of The Color of Your Dreams, The Beatles' Psychedelic Music. The reason I think Sgt. Pepper matters to perhaps all of humanity was because of the cultural impact it had when it initially came out. It affected more than just music fans. It affected fashion. It affected how people spoke. It affected attitudes. And I think a lot of that has been lost on younger generations since, who might not necessarily know how the impact hit the world. But Sgt. Pepper as an event truly is has historical significance. With Sgt. Pepper, obviously the fashion statement of the whole look of the album cover and the dress that the Beatles were wearing, the whole psychedelic feel, it's almost like it exploded on the scene to the mainstream public. Although there was an underground development of that fashion statement, it was if the Beatles were now doing it, so it was cool, and every kid on the block wanted to look like John Lennon or Paul McCartney. You also found that people, with Sgt. Pepper, you found that people were speaking in a different way. There was a more hip vernacular, sort of a as time goes on with the Beat Generation, with the 50s, there was a new hip vernacular. Now in the mid-60s and the Summer of Love Generation, we're now speaking in a new vernacular that seemed to be all tied in with the whole Sgt. Pepper phenomenon. It seems with Sgt. Pepper that the whole "I'd love to turn you on," perhaps it was a wink-wink to each kid on the block, because their parents didn't get exactly what they were saying, the drug references or such. And perhaps the parents were thinking, "Love to turn you on to a whole new style of music," or such. It was always that double meaning, and the Beatles totally intended it to be that way. I find with Generation X and Y and their perception of what Sgt. Pepper means, it's almost as if they sort of have a chip on their shoulder about it because it was their parents' album or it was the previous generation's landmark album, and they don't want to accept it in many ways as being the masterpiece or the cultural importance of which it had. They don't seem to want to accept that. I think you talk to almost any person who loves music, rock music, popular music, and they will acknowledge, yes, I like Sgt. Pepper, but they just don't want to put it on the highest plane, as if, whereas many of them do want to put Revolver on the highest plane. It seems that they can accept that because Revolver didn't have the historical impact in the mid-1960s that Sgt. Pepper did. And in my experience, the Generation Y, the Generation X people just don't want to say, okay, yeah, Sgt. Pepper really was great. I was born in 62, so a lot of this came to me secondhand. I mean, I actually remember listening to the songs because my brother is 10 years older than me, played it over and over and over, but I didn't understand the cultural impact until years later. Well, overall, in a general aspect of how I view Sgt. Pepper's is the fact that they wanted to do everything different on the album. They wanted everything to sound different. They wanted to use distortion. They wanted to heavily compress the sound. They wanted to use every bit of technology that was available to them to make it sound different. They would put microphones down in the bells of brass instruments. They would use microphones as from headphones and attach the headphones to violins just to see what it would sound like. They varied the speeds of the instruments using these huge primitive oscillators. They used all sorts of what was then new recording cutting-edge techniques. Of course, it was on a four-track machine, which is like caveman technology compared to today. But when you go back and listen to those sounds, it's amazing how pure they sound, how original they sound. They're of course have been sampled many times since, but they're just such an honesty in the approach that they took. As far as individual songs from Sgt. Pepper that have always struck me, one thing I will say, there a lot of talk always about A Day in the Life. Everyone loves A Day in the Life, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. But one song that I always feel that just kind of gets passed by is the title track. I think everyone can think back when they put the album on for the first time and they hear the crowd noise as if you're in a concert hall and you're settling in for a classical performance. But then suddenly there's that piercing electric guitar. And even by today's standards, it's a heavy, piercing electric sound. And it just really grabs you right from the beginning. And I've always felt that the initial title track that, of course, fades into With a Little Help from My Friends, I always thought the initial song title track never got its due. Oh, man, it does. And you listen to that, just you listen to that opening guitar lick, and it's just, it's piercing. It's crisp. Some of the other, I'll comment on Strawberry Fields because you said you had talked about that. Strawberry Fields, in my opinion, is sort of Lennon's first fully acknowledged masterpiece. What started with perhaps the experimentation of Tomorrow Never Knows, then on to Strawberry Fields, and then through A Day in a Life, and perhaps culminating in I Am the Walrus, the song seems to evoke a feeling of a surrealistic painting. What's unique about it is it's such a commonplace song that people sometimes don't actually stand back and listen to the song and say, wow, that really was and is revolutionary. It has so many different little elements that were not played on radio in the mid-60s and even aren't played today. The song, of course, has become so commonplace that people don't think about how truly astonishing it is. It's a sound painting. Well, of course, one of the main elements in Strawberry Fields that were not heard on the radio in the 60s or even today is the coda that comes back at the end. And it's not just, we fade the song away and suddenly we bring something back, but this weird psychedelic montage of sound. And it's quite bizarre, even by today's standards. That's one element of Strawberry Fields. There's, of course, the well-known story of how the song was edited together. It's two separate takes that were edited together that initially was deemed by George Martin and Jeff Emmerich, the engineer, to be, well, we can't put this together. But John said, well, I like the first portion of this and the second portion of this take. Put it together. Well, eventually they were able to slow down one take and get it all tonally correct. And if you listen real close, you can sort of hear the difference between the two songs. But it's such a masterful job of production that make the song what it eventually became to be, which is a landmark in production. It's not overproduced, but for its time, it was quite an achievement. There's one moment on Sgt. Pepper that I've always found so unique, and maybe it's just me, but it's in Lovely Rita. And this is another of the examples of the Beatles wanting to put every little new idea, every little new sound into this whole concept of an album. And that's really what the concept what the concept ended up being was just, let's try everything here, from music hall sounds to classical instrumentation to pop music to harder rock. But one thing that always got me was in Lovely Rita. There's the part where Paul is talking, the story's going along, and Paul's talking about took her home and tried to win her and had a laugh over dinner. And then the one part where the cork pops, and it's very subtle in the background, but it's in perfect beat within the song. And a lot of times you tell people about that little incident, and they're not sure what you're talking about. They go back, put the headphones on, and hear that cork popping, and from then on they have a totally new appreciation for the song. I would think that might have been a Mal Evans job in Lovely Rita with the cork popping, because he, like in Maxwell Silverhammer, he was the guy hitting the hammer. In A Day in a Life, Mal Evans was the guy manning the alarm clock. So it might have been, and I'm not actually 100% sure, but it's just such a wonderful little piece of production work, and it seems so trivial, but it really adds to the song. I have to admit, when it comes to A Day in a Life and the buildup of the orchestra, I never really, that has never been a part of the song that I felt was what made the song. It surely is interesting, and but when you know the story behind it, it takes a little away. It's basically Paul had told all these professional classical musicians to play whatever they wanted. He told them what the beginning point would be and what the end point would be and how many measures to play, but just play whatever they wanted, and that's what we end up hearing. And to me, that's not even the best part of the song. Of course, I can't imagine it without that, with that not being in the song, but it's a hodgepodge idea that worked. Yeah, well, I just the one other thing that I had made a note on was with Within You, Without You. Okay. In the song Within You, Without You, what I always found to be so... I'm going to start over. With the song Within You, Without You, what I always found to be so unique was the Indian percussion instruments. The way they recorded them, George Martin and his staff, George Harrison had hired some professional musicians to come in and play these percussion instruments. And when you listen to them, they're so clear. They resonate so clearly in the production. They're so deep, the tonal quality of them. And it just adds such a feeling to your body when you turn that song up and you hear these percussion instruments, and it's kind of weird, and there's the sitar, which at that point the sitar was fairly like, okay, George is using the sitar again, but you have these other instruments like the tabla and these other percussion instruments that are quite bizarre to Western popular music, and I always thought they added such an amazing element within the song. And it's kind of sad because over the years people sometimes like, oh yeah, Within You, Without You, that's, you know, the weird Indian track on the album. But you know, there have been bands since then like Kula Shaker who have expanded upon the whole template of what George had started, merging the two cultures together musically. So I always thought that I've always enjoyed the song Within You, Without You, but I always thought that what made the song was the percussion. Sergeant Pepper definitely influenced more musicians than perhaps any recording ever, and I don't think I'm really stretching it when I say that. And there is good and bad. I think it gave the ticket that musicians were looking for at the time to say, you know, I always thought we could do this in popular music, but no one had ever tried. No one had ever actually been given the chance to really explore the possibilities of popular music and combining rock with all sorts of other themes and ideas. So in that respect, the influence was amazing, because then you had rock bands such as Pink Floyd, all the way through the grunge of Nirvana, or even Chuck D in the rap music, all influenced by Sgt. Pepper and the Beatles, because the Beatles really were the first to say, hey, let's try something different, because popular music was never considered serious before Sgt. Pepper. It was the first time musicologists and historians had taken notice of what was going on in popular music. On the other side of the coin, Sgt. Pepper may have spawned, opened the gates that were never shut. Some perhaps progressive rock music, or even some avant-garde rock, or even some spawning into jazz and jazz fusion may have taken liberty and said, you know, well, the Beatles were going in this direction, so let's go further. And there is that fine line, I think, that you cross when you cross out of music into a tonal anarchy. And although there is some great experimental music spawned from Sgt. Pepper, there have been a few that have gone off the deep end.